Miss Marple followed Sister along a passage and into a small, well-appointed single room. In a bed there, in a dimly lighted room, since the blinds were half drawn, lay Elizabeth Temple. She lay there like a statue, yet she did not give the impression of being asleep. Her breath came uncertainly in slight gasps. Sister Barker bent to examine her patient, motioned Miss Marple into a chair beside the bed. She then crossed the room to the door again. A young man with a notebook in his hand came from behind the screen there. "Doctor's orders, Mr. Reckitt," said Sister Barker. A nurse also appeared. She had been sitting in the opposite corner of the room. "Call me if necessary, Nurse Edmonds," said Sister Barker, "and get Miss Marple anything she may need." Miss Marple loosened her coat. The room was warm. The nurse approached and took it from her. Then she retired to her former position. Miss Marple sat down in the chair. She looked at Elizabeth Temple, thinking, as she had thought before when looking at her in the coach, what a fine-shaped head she had. Her grey hair drawn back from it fitted her face in a perfect cap-like effect. A handsome woman, and a woman of personality. Yes, a thousand pities, Miss Marple thought, a thousand pities if the world was going to lose Elizabeth Temple. Miss Marple eased the cushion at her back, moved the chair a fraction of an inch, and sat quietly to wait. Whether to wait in vain or to some point, she had no idea. Time passed. 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour, 35 minutes. Then suddenly, quite unexpectedly, as it were, a voice came. Low but distinct, slightly husky. None of the resonance it had once held.
"Miss Marple."
Elizabeth Temple's eyes were open now. They were looking at Miss Marple. They looked competent, perfectly sensible. She was studying the face of the woman who was sitting by her bed, studying her without any sign of emotion, of surprise, only, one would say, of scrutiny, fully conscious scrutiny. And the voice spoke again.
"Miss Marple, you are Jane Marple."
"That is right, yes," said Miss Marple, "Jane Marple.
Henry often spoke of you. He said things about you."
The voice stopped. Miss Marple said with a slight query in her voice, "Henry?"
"Henry Clithering, an old friend of mine, very old friend."
"An old friend of mine, too," said Miss Marple. "Henry Clithering." Her mind went back to the many years she had known him. Sir Henry Clithering, the things he had said to her, the assistance he had asked from her sometimes, and the assistance that she had asked from him. A very old friend.
"I remembered your name on the passenger list. I thought it must be you. You could help. That is what he, Henry, yes, would say if he were here. You might be able to help, to find out. It's important, very important, although it's a long time ago now. A long time ago."
Her voice faltered a little, her eyes half closed. Nurse got up, came across the room, picked up a small glass and held it to Elizabeth Temple's lips. Miss Temple took a sip, nodded her head dismissively. Nurse put down the glass and went back to her chair.
"If I can help, I will," said Miss Marple.
She asked no further questions. Miss Temple said,
"Good."
And after a minute or two, again,
"Good."
For 2 or 3 minutes she lay with her eyes closed. She might have been asleep or unconscious. Then her eyes opened again suddenly.
"Which?" she said. "Which of them? That's what one has got to know. Do you know what I'm talking about?"
"I think so. A girl who died. Nora Broad." A frown came quickly to Elizabeth Temple's forehead.
"No, no, no, the other girl. Verity Hunt."
There was a pause, and then,
"Jane Marple. You're old, older than when he talked about you. You're older, but you can still find out things, can't you?
Her voice became slightly higher, more insistent.
You can, can't you? Say you can. I've not much time. I know that. I know it quite well. One of them, but which? Find out. Henry would have said you can. It may be dangerous for you, but you'll find out, won't you?
With God's help, I will, said Miss Marple. It was a vow.
Ah.
The eyes closed, then opened again. Something like a smile seemed to try and twitch the lips.
The big stone from above. The stone of death. Who rolled that stone down? Don't know. No matter. Only Verity. Find out about Verity. Truth. Another name for truth. Verity.
Miss Marple saw the faint relaxation of the body on the bed. There was a faintly whispered,
Goodbye. Do your best.
Her body relaxed, the eyes closed. The nurse came again to the bedside. This time she took up the pulse, felt it, and beckoned to Miss Marple. Miss Marple rose obediently and followed her out of the room.
That's been a big effort for her, said the nurse. She won't regain consciousness again for some time, perhaps not at all. I hope you learned something.
I don't think I did, said Miss Marple, but one never knows, does one?
Did you get anything? Asked Professor Wanstead as they went out to the car.
A name, said Miss Marple. Verity. Was that the girl's name?
Yes, Verity Hunt.
Elizabeth Temple died an hour and a half later. She died without regaining consciousness. Chapter 14. Mr. Broadrib wonders.
Seen the Times this morning?
Said Mr. Broadrib to his partner, Mr. Schuster. Mr. Schuster said he couldn't afford the Times. He took the Telegraph.
Well, it may be in that, too, said Mr. Broadrib. In the deaths. Miss Elizabeth Temple, D.S.C.
Mr. Schuster looked faintly puzzled.
Headmistress of Fallowfield. You've heard of Fallowfield, haven't you?
Of course, said Schuster. Girls' school. Been going for 50 years or so. First class. Fantastically expensive. So, she was the headmistress of it, was she? I thought the headmistress had resigned some time ago. 6 months, at least. I'm sure I read about it in the paper. That is to say, there was a bit about the new headmistress. Married woman. Youngish. 35 to 40. Modern ideas. Give the girls lessons in cosmetics. Let them wear trouser suits. Something of that kind.
Said Mr. Broadrib, making the noise that solicitors of his age are likely to make when they hear something which elicits criticism based on long experience.
Don't think she'll ever make the name that Elizabeth Temple did. Quite someone she was. Been there a long time, too.
Yes,
said Mr. Schuster, somewhat uninterested. He wondered why Broadrib was so interested in defunct schoolmistresses. Schools were not really of particular interest to either of the two gentlemen. Their own offspring were now more or less disposed of. Mr. Broadrib's two sons were respectively in the civil service and in an oil firm, and Mr. Schuster's rather younger progeny were at different universities, where both of them, respectively, were making as much trouble for those in authority as they possibly could do. He said,
"What about her?"
"She was on a coach tour," said Mr. Broadrib.
"Those coaches," said Mr. Schuster. "I wouldn't let any of my relations go on one of those. One went off a precipice in Switzerland last week, and 2 months ago one had a crash and 20 were killed. Don't know who drives these things nowadays."
"It was one of those country houses and gardens and objects of interest in Britain, or whatever they call it, tours," said Mr. Broadrib. "That's not quite the right name, but you know what I mean."
"Oh, yes, I know. Oh, the, yes, that's the one we sent Miss What's-her-name on. The one old Raphael booked."
"Miss Jane Marple was on it." She didn't get killed too, did she? Asked Mr. Schuster.
Not so far as I know, said Mr. Broadrib. I just wondered a bit, though.
Was it a road accident?
No. It was at one of the beauty spot places. They were walking on a path up a hill. It was a stiff walk, up a rather steep hill with boulders and things on it. Some of the boulders got loose and came rushing down the mountainside. Miss Temple was knocked out and taken to hospital with concussion and died.
Bad luck, said Mr. Schuster, and waited for more.
I only wondered, said Mr. Broadrib, because I happened to remember that, well, that Fallowfield was the school where the girl was at.
What girl? I don't really know what you're talking about, Broadrib.
The girl who was done in by young Michael Raphael. I was just recalling a few things which might seem to have some slight connection with this curious Jane Marple business that old Raphael was so keen on. Wish he'd told us more.
What's the connection? Said Mr. Schuster. He looked more interested now. His legal wits were in process of being sharpened to give a sound opinion on whatever it was that Mr. Broadrib was about to confide to him.
That girl, can't remember her last name now, Christian name was Hope or Faith or something like that. Verity, that was her name. Verity Hunter, I think it was. She was one of that series of murdered girls. Found her body in a ditch about 30 miles away from where she'd gone missing. Been dead 6 months. Strangled, apparently, and her head and face had been bashed in. To delay recognition, they thought, but she was recognised, all right. Clothes, handbag, jewellery nearby, some mole or scar. Oh, yes, she was identified quite easily.
Actually, she was the one the trial was all about, wasn't she?
Yes. Suspected of having done away with perhaps 3 other girls during the past year, Michael was, but evidence wasn't so good in the other deaths, so the police went all out on this one. Plenty of evidence. Bad record. Earlier cases of assault and rape. Well, we all know what rape is nowadays. Mum tells the girl she's got to accuse the young man of rape, even if the young man hasn't had much chance with the girl at him all the time to come to the house while Mum's away at work or Dad's gone on holiday. Doesn't stop badgering him until she's forced him to sleep with her. Then, as I say, Mum tells the girl to call it rape. However, that's not the point, said Mr. Broadrib. I wondered if things mightn't tie up a bit, you know. I thought this Jane Marple business with Raphael might have something to do with Michael. Found guilty, wasn't he, and given a life sentence? Oh, I can't remember now, it's so long ago. Or did they get away with a verdict of diminished responsibility? And Verity Hunter, or Hunt, was educated at that school. Miss Temple's school. She wasn't still a schoolgirl, though, was she, when she was killed? Not that I can remember. Oh, no. She was 18 or 19, living with relations or friends of her parents or something like that. Nice house, nice people. Nice girl, by all accounts. The sort of girl whose relations always say she was a very quiet girl, rather shy, didn't go about with strange people and had no boyfriends. Relations never know what boyfriends a girl has. The girls take mighty good care of that. And young Raphael was said to be very attractive to girls.
Never been any doubt that he did it? Asked Mr. Schuster.
Not a scrap. Told a lot of lies in the witness box, anyway. His counsel would have done better not to have let him give evidence. A lot of his friends gave him an alibi that didn't stand up, if you know what I mean. All his friends seemed to be fluent liars.
What's your feeling about it, Broadrib?
Oh, I haven't got any feelings, said Mr. Broadrib. I was just wondering if this woman's death might tie up.
In what way?
Well, you know, about these boulders that fall down cliff sides and drop on top of someone. It's not always in the course of nature. Boulders usually stay where they are, in my experience.
Chapter 15. Verity.
Verity, said Miss Marple. Elizabeth Margaret Temple had died the evening before. It had been a peaceful death. Miss Marple, sitting once more amidst the faded chintz of the drawing-room in the old manor house, had laid aside the baby's pink coat, which she had previously been engaged in knitting, and had substituted a crocheted purple scarf. This half-mourning touch went with Miss Marple's early Victorian ideas of tactfulness in face of tragedy.
An inquest was to be held on the following day. The vicar had been approached and had agreed to hold a brief memorial service in the church as soon as arrangements could be made. Undertakers, suitably attired, with proper mourning faces, took general charge of things, in liaison with the police. The inquest was to take place on the following morning at 11 o'clock. Members of the coach party had agreed to attend the inquest, and several of them had chosen to remain on so as to attend the church service also. Mrs. Glynn had come to the Golden Boar and urged Miss Marple to return to the old manor house until she finally returned to the tour. "You will get away from all the reporters." Miss Marple had thanked all three sisters warmly and had accepted. The coach tour would be resumed after the memorial service, driving first to South Beedston, 35 miles away, where there was a good-class hotel which had been originally chosen for a stopping place. After that, the tour would go on as usual. There were, however, as Miss Marple had considered likely, certain persons who were disengaging themselves and returning home, or were going in other directions and not continuing on the tour. There was something to be said in favour of either decision. To leave what would become a journey of painful memories, or to continue with the sightseeing that had already been paid for and which had been interrupted only by one of those painful accidents that may happen on any sightseeing expedition. A lot would depend, Miss Marple thought, on the outcome of the inquest. Miss Marple, after exchanging various conventional remarks proper to the occasion with her three hostesses, had devoted herself to her purple wool and had sat considering her next line of investigation. And so it was that, with her fingers still busy, she had uttered the one word, verity, throwing it as one throws a pebble into a stream, solely to observe what the result, if any, would be. Would it mean something to her hostesses? It might, or it might not. Otherwise, when she joined the members of the tour at their hotel meal this evening, which had been arranged, she would try the effect of it there. It had been, she thought to herself, the last word, or almost the last word, that Elizabeth Temple had spoken. So therefore, thought Miss Marple, her fingers still busy because she did not need to look at her crocheting, she could read a book or conduct a conversation while her fingers, though slightly crippled with rheumatism, would proceed correctly through their appointed movements. So therefore, verity, like a stone into a pool causing ripples, a splash, something or nothing. Surely there would be a reaction of one sort or another. Yes, she had not been mistaken. Although her face registered nothing, the keen eyes behind her glasses had watched three people in a simultaneous manner, as she had trained herself to do for many years now when wishing to observe her neighbours, either in church, mothers' meetings, or at other public functions in St. Mary Mead, when she had been on the track of some interesting piece of news or gossip. Mrs. Glynn had dropped the book she was holding and had looked across towards Miss Marple with slight surprise. Surprise, it seemed, at the particular word coming from Miss Marple, but not surprised really to hear it. Clotilde reacted differently. Her head shot up, she leant forward a little, then she looked not at Miss Marple, but across the room in the direction of the window. Her hands clenched themselves. She kept very still. Miss Marple, although dropping her head slightly as though she was not looking any more, noted that her eyes were filling with tears. Clotilde sat quite still and let the tears roll down her cheeks. She made no attempt to take out a handkerchief. She uttered no word. Miss Marple was impressed by the aura of grief that came from her. Anthea's reaction was different. It was quick, excited, almost pleasurable.
Verity? Verity, did you say? Did you know her? I'd no idea. It is Verity Hunt, you mean?
Lavinia Glynn said, It's a Christian name.
I never knew anyone of that name, said Miss Marple, but I did mean a Christian name. Yes, it is rather unusual, I think. Verity,
she repeated it thoughtfully. She let her purple wool ball fall and looked round with the slightly apologetic and embarrassed look of one who realizes she has made a serious faux pas, but not sure why. I am so sorry. Have I said something I shouldn't? It was only because...
No, of course not, said Mrs. Glynn. It was just that it is a name we know, a name with which we have associations.
It just came into my mind, said Miss Marple, still apologetic.
Because, you know, it was poor Miss Temple who said it. I went to see her, you know, yesterday afternoon. Professor Wanstead took me. He seemed to think that I might be able to, I don't know if it's the proper word, to rouse her in some way. She was in a coma, and they thought, not that I was a friend of hers at any time, but we had chatted together on the tour, and we often sat beside each other, as you know, on some of the days, and we had talked. And he thought perhaps I might be of some use. I'm afraid I wasn't, though. Not at all. I just sat there and waited. And then she did say one or two words, but they didn't seem to mean anything. But finally, just when it was time for me to go, she did open her eyes and looked at me. I don't know if she was mistaking me for someone, but she did say that word, Verity. And, well, of course, it stuck in my mind, especially with her passing away yesterday evening. It must have been someone or something that she had in her mind. But, of course, it might just mean... Well, of course, it might just mean truth. That's what Verity means, doesn't it?
She looked from Clotilde to Lavinia to Anthea.
It was the Christian name of a girl we knew, said Lavinia Glynn. That is why it startled us.
Especially because of the awful way she died, said Anthea.
Clotilde said in her deep voice, Anthea, there's no need to go into these details.
But after all, everyone knows quite well about her, said Anthea.
She looked towards Miss Marple.
I thought perhaps you might have known about her, because you knew Mr. Raphael, didn't you? Well, I mean, he wrote to us about you, so you must have known him, and I thought perhaps, well, he'd mentioned the whole thing to you.
I am so sorry, said Miss Marple. I'm afraid I don't quite understand what you're talking about.
They found her body in a ditch, said Anthea.
There was never any holding Anthea, Miss Marple thought, not once she'd got going. But she thought that Anthea's vociferous talk was putting additional strain on Clotilde. She had taken out a handkerchief now, in a quiet, non-committal way. She brushed tears from her eyes and then sat upright, her back very straight, her eyes deep and tragic. Verity, she said, was a girl we cared for very much. She lived here for a while. I was very fond of her.
And she was very fond of you, said Lavinia.
Her parents were friends of mine, said Clotilde. They were killed in a plane accident.
She was at school at Fallowfield, explained Lavinia. I suppose that was how Miss Temple came to remember her.
Oh, I see, said Miss Marple. Where Miss Temple was headmistress, is that it? I have heard of Fallowfield often, of course. It's a very fine school, isn't it?
Yes, said Clotilde.
Verity was a pupil there. After her parents died, she came to stay with us for a time, while she could decide what she wanted to do with her future. She was 18 or 19, a very sweet girl, and a very affectionate and loving one. She thought perhaps of training for nursing, but she had very good brains, and Miss Temple was very insistent that she ought to go to university. So she was studying and having coaching for that when this terrible thing happened.
She turned her face away.
Do you mind if we don't talk about it any more just now?
Oh, of course not, said Miss Marple. I'm so sorry to have impinged on some tragedy. I didn't know. I haven't heard. I thought, well, I mean...
She became more and more incoherent. That evening, she heard a little more. Mrs. Glynn came to her bedroom when she was changing her dress to go out and join the others at the hotel.
"I thought I ought to come and explain a little to you," said Mrs. Glynn, about the girl, Verity Hunt. "Of course you couldn't know that our sister Clotilde was particularly fond of her, and that her really horrible death was a terrible shock. We never mention her if we can help it, but
I think it would be easier if I told you the facts completely, and you will understand. Apparently, Verity had, without our knowledge, made friends with an undesirable, well, a more than undesirable, it turned out to be a dangerous young man, who already had a criminal record. He came here to visit us when he was passing through once. We knew his father very well. She paused. I think I'd better tell you the whole truth. If you don't know, and you don't seem to, he was actually Mr. Raphael's son, Michael.
Oh, dear, said Miss Marple. I can't remember his name, but I do remember hearing that there was a son and that he hadn't been very satisfactory.
A little more than that, said Mrs. Glynn. He'd always given trouble. He'd been had up in court once or twice for various things. Once assaulting a teenager, other things of that type. Of course, I consider myself that the magistrates are too lenient with that kind of thing. They don't want to upset a young man's university career, and so they let them off with a suspended sentence, something of that kind. If these boys were sent to jail at once, it would perhaps warn them off that type of life. He was a thief, too. He had forged cheques. He pinched things. He was a thoroughly bad lot. We were friends of his mother's. It was lucky for her, I think, that she died young, before she had time to be upset by the way her son was turning out. Mr. Raphael did all he could, I think. Tried to find suitable jobs for the boy, paid fines for him and things like that. But I think it was a great blow to him, though he pretended to be more or less indifferent and to write it off as one of those things that happen. We had, as probably people here in the village would tell you, we had a bad outbreak of murders and violence in this district. Not only here, they were in different parts of the country, 20 miles away, sometimes 50 miles away. One or two, it's suspected by the police, were nearly 100 miles away. But they seemed to centre more or less on this part of the world. Anyway, Verity one day went out to visit a friend and, well, she didn't come back. We went to the police about it. The police sought for her, searched the whole countryside, but they couldn't find any trace of her. We advertised, they advertised, and they suggested that she'd gone off with a boyfriend. Then word began to get round that she had been seen with Michael Raphael. By now the police had their eye on Michael as a possibility for certain crimes that had occurred, although they couldn't find any direct evidence. Verity was said to have been seen, described by her clothing and other things, with a young man of Michael's appearance, and in a car that corresponded to a description of his car. But there was no further evidence until her body was discovered 6 months later, 30 miles from here, in a rather wild part of wooded country, in a ditch covered with stones and piled earth. Clotilde had to go and identify it. It was Verity, all right. She'd been strangled and her head beaten in. Clotilde's never quite got over the shock. There were certain marks, a mole and an old scar, and of course her clothes, and the contents of her handbag. Miss Temple was very fond of Verity. She must have thought of her just before she died.
I'm sorry, said Miss Marple. I'm really very, very sorry. Please tell your sister that I didn't know. I had no idea.
Chapter 16. The Inquest. Miss Marple walked slowly along the village street on her way towards the marketplace where the inquest was to take place in the old-fashioned Georgian building which had been known for 100 years as the Curfew Arms. She glanced at her watch. There was still a good 20 minutes before she need be there. She looked into the shops. She paused before the shop that sold wool and babies' jackets and peered inside for a few moments. A girl in the shop was serving. Small woolly coats were being tried on 2 children. Further along the counter, there was an elderly woman. Miss Marple went into the shop, went along the counter to a seat opposite the elderly woman, and produced a sample of pink wool. She had run out, she explained, of this particular brand of wool, and had a little jacket she needed to finish. The match was soon made. Some more samples of wool that Miss Marple had admired were brought out for her to look at, and soon she was in conversation, starting with the sadness of the accident which had just taken place. Mrs. Merripit, if her name was identical with that which was written up outside the shop, was full of the importance of the accident and the general difficulties of getting local governments to do anything about the dangers of footpaths and public rights of way. After the rain, you see, you get all the soil washed off, and then the boulders get loose, and then down they comes. I remember one year they had three falls, three accidents there was. One boy nearly killed he was. And then later that year, oh, 6 months later, I think, there was a man got his arm broken. And the third time, it was poor old Mrs. Walker. Blind she was, and pretty well deaf too. She never heard nothing, or she could have got out of the way, they say. Somebody saw it, and they called out to her, but they was too far away to reach her or to run to get her, and so she was killed.
Oh, how sad, said Miss Marple. How tragic. The sort of thing that's not easily forgotten, is it?
No, indeed. I expect the coroner'll mention it today.
I expect he will, said Miss Marple. In a terrible way, it seems quite a natural thing to happen, doesn't it? Though, of course, there are accidents sometimes by pushing things about, you know. Just pushing, making stones rock, that sort of thing.
Ah, well, there's boys as be up to anything. But I don't think I've ever seen them up that way fooling about.
Miss Marple went on to the subject of pullovers. Bright-coloured pullovers. It's not for myself, she said. It's for one of my great-nephews. You know, he wants a polo-neck pullover and very bright colours he'd like.
Yes, they do like bright colours nowadays, don't they? Agreed Mrs. Merripit.
Not in jeans. Black jeans they like, black or dark blue, but they like a bit of brightness up above. Miss Marple described a pullover of check design in bright colours. There appeared to be quite a good stock of pullovers and jerseys, but anything in red and black did not seem to be on display, nor even was anything like it mentioned as having been lately in stock. After looking at a few samples, Miss Marple prepared to take her departure, chatting first about the former murders she had heard about which had happened in this part of the world.
They got the fellow in the end, said Mrs. Merripit. Nice-looking boy. Hardly have thought it of him. He'd been well brought up, you know. Been to university and all that. Father was very rich, they say. Touched in the head, I suppose. Not that they sent him to Broadway or whatever the place is. No, they didn't do that, but I think myself he must have been a mental case. There was five or six other girls, so they said. The police had one after another of the young men round hereabouts to help them. Geoffrey Grant they had up. They was pretty sure it was him to begin with. He was always a bit queer ever since he was a boy. Interfered with little girls going to school, you know. He used to offer them sweets and get them to come down the lanes with him and see the primroses or something like that. Yes, they had very strong suspicions about him, but it wasn't him. And then there was another one, Bert Williams, but he'd been far away on two occasions at least, what they call an alibi, so it couldn't be him. And then at last it came to this, what's his name? I can't remember him now. Luke, I think his name was. No, Mike something. Very nice looking, as I say, but he had a bad record. Yes, stealing, forging checks, all sorts of things like that. And two, what do you call them, paternity cases. No, I don't mean that, but you know what I mean. When a girl's going to have a baby, you know, and they make an order and make the fellow pay. He got two girls in the family way before this.
Was this girl in the family way?
Oh, yes, she was. At first we thought when the body was found it might have been Nora Broad. That was Mrs. Broad's niece down at the mill shop. Great one for going with the boys, she was. She'd gone away missing from home in the same way. Nobody knew where she was. So when this body turned up 6 months later, they thought at first it was her.
But it wasn't?
No, someone quite different.
Did her body ever turn up?
No. I suppose it might some day. But they think on the whole it was pushed into the river.
Ah, well, you never know, do you? You never know what you may dig up off a ploughed field or something like that. I was taken once to see all that treasure. Luton Loo, was it? Some name like that. Somewhere in the East Counties. Under a ploughed field it was. Beautiful. Gold ships and Viking ships and gold plate. Enormous great platters. Well, you never know. Any day you may turn up a dead body or you may turn up a gold platter. And it may be hundreds of years old like that gold plate was, or it may be a 3 or 4 years old body.
Like Mary Lucas, who'd been missing for 4 years, they say. Somewhere near Reigate she was found. Ah, well, all these things. It's a sad life. Yes, it's a very sad life. You never know what's coming.
There was another girl who lived here, wasn't there? Said Miss Marple. Who was killed?
You mean the body they thought was Nora Broad's, but it wasn't?
Yes, I've forgotten her name now.
Hope it was, I think. Hope or Charity. One of those sort of names, if you know what I mean. Used to be used a lot in Victorian times, but you don't hear them so much nowadays. Lived at the manor house, she did. She'd been there for some time after her parents were killed.
Her parents died in an accident, didn't they?
That's right. In a plane going to Spain or Italy, one of those places.
And you say she came to live here? Were they relations of hers?
I don't know if they were relations, but Mrs. Glynn, as she is now, was, I think, a great friend of her mother's or something that way. Mrs. Glynn, of course, was married and gone abroad, but Miss Clotilde, that's the eldest one, the dark one, she was very fond of the girl. She took her abroad, to Italy and France and all sorts of places, and she had her trained a bit of typewriting and shorthand and that sort of thing, and art classes too. She's very arty, Miss Clotilde is. Oh, she was mighty fond of the girl. Broken-hearted she was when she disappeared.
Quite different to Miss Anthea. Miss Anthea is the youngest one, isn't she?
Yes, not quite all there, some people say. Scatty-like, you know, in her mind. Sometimes you see her walking along, talking to herself, you know, and tossing her head in a very queer way. Children get frightened of her sometimes. They say she's a bit queer about things. I don't know, you hear everything in a village, don't you? The great uncle who lived here before, he was a bit peculiar too. Used to practice revolver shooting in the garden. For no reason at all, so far as anyone could see. Proud of his marksmanship, he said he was. Whatever marksmanship is.
But Miss Clotilde is not peculiar.
Oh no, she's clever, she is. Knows Latin and Greek, I believe. Would have liked to go to university, but she had to look after her mother, who was an invalid for a long time. But she was very fond of Miss... Now, what was her name? Faith, perhaps? She was very fond of her and treated her like a daughter. And then along comes this young... What's his name? Michael, I think it was. And then one day the girl just goes off without saying a word to anyone. I don't know if Miss Clotilde knew as she was in the family way.
But you knew... said Miss Marple.
Ah, well, I've got a lot of experience. I usually know when a girl's that way. It's plain enough to the eye. It's not only the shape, as you might say. You can tell by the look in their eyes and the way they walk and sit and the sort of giddy fits they get and sick turns now and again. Oh, yes, I thought to myself, here's another one of them. Miss Clotilde had to go and identify the body. Nearly broke her up, it did. She was like a different woman for weeks afterwards. Fairly loved that girl, she did.
And the other one, Miss Anthea? Funnily enough, you know, I thought she had a kind of pleased look, as though she was, yes, just pleased. Not nice, eh?
Farmer Plummer's daughter used to look like that. Always used to go and see pigs killed. Enjoyed it. Funny things goes on in families.
Miss Marple said goodbye, saw she had another 10 minutes to go, and passed on to the post office. The post office and general store of Jocelyn St. Mary was just off the market square. Miss Marple went into the post office, bought some stamps, looked at some of the postcards, and then turned her attention to various paperback books. A middle-aged woman with a rather vinegary face presided behind the postal counter. She assisted Miss Marple to free a book from the wire support in which the books were.
Stick a bit, sometimes they do. People don't put them back straight, you see.
There was by now no one else in the shop. Miss Marple looked with distaste at the jacket of the book, a naked girl with blood-stained markings on her face and a sinister-looking killer bending over her with a blood-stained knife in his hand.
Really, she said, I don't like these horrors nowadays.
Gone a bit too far with some of their jackets, haven't they?
Said Mrs. Vinegar.
Not everyone as likes them. too fond of violence in every way, I'd say, nowadays.
Miss Marple detached a second book. "Whatever Happened to Baby Jane?" she read. "Oh, dear, it's a sad world one lives in."
"Oh, yes, I know. Saw in yesterday's paper I did some woman left her baby outside a supermarket, and then someone else comes along and wheels it away. And all for no reason, as far as one can see. The police found her, all right. They all seem to say the same things, whether they steal from a supermarket or take away a baby. Don't know what came over them, they say."
"Perhaps they really don't," suggested Miss Marple. Mrs. Vinegar looked even more like vinegar.
"Take me a lot to believe that, it would."
Miss Marple looked round. The post office was still empty. She advanced to the window.
"If you are not too busy, I wonder if you could answer a question of mine," said Miss Marple. "I have done something extremely stupid. Of late years I make so many mistakes. This was a parcel addressed to a charity. I send them clothes, pullovers and children's woolies, and I did it up and addressed it, and it was sent off, and only this morning it came to me suddenly that I'd made a mistake and written the wrong address. I don't suppose any list is kept of the address of parcels, but I thought someone might have just happened to remember it. The address I meant to put was the Dockyard and Thameside Welfare Association."
Mrs. Vinegar was looking quite kindly now, touched by Miss Marple's patent incapacity and general state of senility and dither.
"Did you bring it yourself?" "No, I didn't. I'm staying at the old manor house, and one of them, Mrs. Glynn, I think, said she or her sister would post it. Very kind of her."
"Let me see now. It would have been on Tuesday, would it?" "It wasn't Mrs. Glynn who brought it in. It was the youngest one, Miss Anthea."
"Yes, yes, I think that was the day.
I remember it quite well. In a good-sized dress box and moderately heavy, I think. But not what you said, Dockyard Association. I can't recall anything like that. It was the Reverend Matthews, the East Ham Women and Children's Woolen Clothing Appeal."
"Oh, yes."
Miss Marple clasped her hands in an ecstasy of relief.
"How clever of you. I see now how I came to do it. At Christmas I did send things to the East Ham Society in answer to a special appeal for knitted things, so I must have copied down the wrong address. Can you just repeat it?"
She entered it carefully in a small notebook.
"I'm afraid the parcel's gone off, though."
"Oh, yes, but I can write explaining the mistake and ask them to forward the parcel to the Dockyard Association instead. Thank you so much."
Miss Marple trotted out. Mrs. Vinegar produced stamps for her next customer, remarking in an aside to a colleague,
"Scatty as they make 'em, poor old creature. Expect she's always doing that sort of thing."
Miss Marple went out of the post office and ran into Emlyn Price and Joanna Crawford. Joanna, she noticed, was very pale and looked upset.
"I've got to give evidence," she said. "I don't know. What will they ask me? I'm so afraid. I don't like it. I told the police sergeant. I told him what I thought we saw."
"Don't you worry, Joanna," said Emlyn Price. "This is just a coroner's inquest, you know. He's a nice man, a doctor, I believe. He'll just ask you a few questions and you'll say what you saw."
"You saw it too," said Joanna.
"Yes, I did," said Emlyn. "At least I saw there was someone up there, near the boulders and things. Now come on, Joanna."
"They came and searched our rooms at the hotel," said Joanna.
"They asked our permission, but they had a search warrant.
They looked in our rooms and among the things in our luggage.
I think they wanted to find that check pullover you described. Anyway, there's nothing for you to worry about. If you'd had a black and scarlet pullover yourself, you wouldn't have talked about it, would you? It was black and scarlet, wasn't it?"
"I don't know," said Emlyn Price. "I don't really know the colours of things very well. I think it was a sort of bright colour, that's all I know."
"They didn't find one," said Joanna. "After all, none of us have very many things with us. You don't when you go on a coach travel. There wasn't anything like that among anybody's things. I've never seen anyone, of our lot, I mean, wearing anything like that. Not so far. Have you?
No, I haven't. But I suppose... I don't know that I should know if I had seen it, said Emlyn Price. I don't always know red from green.
No, you're a bit colour blind, aren't you? Said Joanna. I noticed that the other day.
What do you mean you noticed it?
My red scarf. I asked if you'd seen it. You said you'd seen a green one somewhere, and you brought me the red one. I'd left it in the dining room, but you didn't really know it was red.
Well, don't go about saying I'm colour blind. I don't like it. Puts people off in some way.
Men are more often colour blind than women, said Joanna. It's one of those sex link things, she added with an air of erudition. You know, it passes through the female and comes out in the male.
You make it sound as though it was measles, said Emlyn Price. Well, here we are.
You don't seem to mind, said Joanna as they walked up the steps.
Well, I don't really. I've never been to an inquest. Things are rather interesting when you do them for the first time.
Dr. Stokes was a middle-aged man with greying hair and spectacles. Police evidence was given first, then the medical evidence, with technical details of the concussion injuries which had caused death. Mrs. Sanborn gave particulars of the coach tour, the expedition as arranged for that particular afternoon, and particulars of how the fatality had occurred. Miss Temple, she said, although not young, was a very brisk walker. The party were going along a well-known footpath which led round the curve of a hill which slowly mounted to the old Moorland Church, originally built in Elizabethan times, though repaired and added to later. On an adjoining crest was what was called the Bonaventure Memorial. It was a fairly steep ascent, and people usually climbed it at different paces from each other. The younger ones very often ran or walked ahead and reached their destination much earlier than the others. The elderly ones took it slowly. She herself usually kept at the rear of the party, so that she could, if necessary, suggest to people who were tired that they could, if they liked, go back. Miss Temple, she said, had been talking to a Mr. and Mrs. Butler. Miss Temple, though she was over 60, had been slightly impatient at their slow pace and had outdistanced them, had turned a corner and gone on ahead rather rapidly, which she had done often before. She was inclined to get impatient if waiting for people to catch up for too long and preferred to make her own pace. They had heard a cry ahead, and she and the others had run on, turned a curve of the pathway, and had found Miss Temple lying on the ground. A large boulder, detached from the hillside above, where there were several others of the same kind, must, they thought, have rolled down the hillside and struck Miss Temple as she was going along the path below. A most unfortunate and tragic accident.
You had no idea there was anything but an accident?
No, indeed. I can hardly see how it could have been anything but an accident.
You saw no one above you on the hillside?
No. This is the main path round the hill, but of course people do wander about over the top. I did not see anyone that particular afternoon.
Then Joanna Crawford was called. After particulars of her name and age, Dr. Stokes asked,
You were not walking with the remainder of the party?
No, we'd left the path. We'd gone round the hill a little higher up the slope.
You were walking with a companion?
Yes, with Mr. Emlyn Price.
There was no one else actually walking with you?
No, we were talking, and we were looking at one or two of the flowers. They seemed of rather an uncommon kind. Emlyn's interested in botany.
Were you out of sight of the rest of the party?
Not all the time. They were walking along the main path, some way below us, that is.
Did you see Miss Temple?
I think so. She was walking ahead of the others, and I think I saw her turn a corner of the path ahead of them, after which we didn't see her because the contour of the hill hid her.
Did you see someone walking above you on the hillside?
Yes, up amongst a good many boulders. There's a sort of great patch of boulders on the side of the hill.
Yes, said Dr. Stokes. I know exactly the place you mean. Large granite boulders. People call them the Weathers, or the Grey Weathers sometimes.
I suppose they might look like sheep from a distance, but we weren't so very far away from them.
And you saw someone up there?
Yes. Someone was more or less in the middle of the boulders, leaning over them.
Pushing them, do you think?
Yes, I thought so, and wondered why. He seemed to be pushing at one on the outside of the group near the edge. They were so big and so heavy, I would have thought it was impossible to push them. But the one he or she was pushing seemed to be balanced, like a rocking stone.
You said first he. Now you say he or she, Miss Crawford. Which do you think it was?
Well, I thought it was a man, but I wasn't actually thinking at the time. He or she was wearing trousers and a pullover, a sort of man's pullover with a polo neck.
What colour was the pullover?
Rather a bright red and black, in checks. And there was longish hair at the back of a kind of beret, rather like a woman's hair, but then it might just as well have been a man's.
It certainly might, said Dr. Stokes rather dryly. Identifying a male or female figure by their hair is certainly not easy these days.
He went on.
What happened next?
Well, the stone began to roll over. It sort of toppled over the edge, and then it began to gain speed. I said to Emlyn, oh, it's going to go right over down the hill. Then we heard a sort of crash as it fell, and I think I heard a cry from below, but I might have imagined it.
And then?
Oh, we ran on, up a bit and round the corner of the hill to see what happened to the stone.
And what did you see?
We saw the boulder below on the path with a body underneath it and people coming running round the corner.
Was it Miss Temple who uttered the cry?
I think it must have been. It might have been one of the others who was catching up and turned the corner. Oh, it was horrible.
Yes, I'm sure it was. What had happened to the figure you'd seen above, the man or woman in the red and black pullover? Was that figure still there among the stones?
I don't know. I never looked up there. I was busy looking at the accident and running down the hill to see if one could do anything. I did just look up, I think, but there wasn't anyone in sight, only the stones. There were a lot of contours, and you could lose anyone quite easily from view.
Could it have been one of your party?
Oh, no. I'm sure it wasn't one of us. I would have known because, I mean, one would have known by their clothes. I'm sure nobody was wearing a scarlet and black pullover.
Thank you, Miss Crawford.
Emlyn Price was called next. His story was practically a replica of Joanna's. There was a little more evidence, which did not amount to much. The coroner brought in that there was not sufficient evidence to show how Elizabeth Temple had come to her death and adjourned the inquest for a fortnight. Chapter 17. Miss Marple makes a visit. As they walked back from the inquest to the Golden Boar, hardly anyone spoke. Professor Wanstead walked beside Miss Marple, and since she was not a very fast walker, they fell slightly behind the others.
"What will happen next?" Miss Marple asked at last.
"Do you mean legally or to us?"
"I suppose both," said Miss Marple, "because one will surely affect the other."
"It will be presumably a case of the police making further inquiries arising out of the evidence given by those two young people."
"Yes."
"Further inquiry will be necessary. The inquest was bound to be adjourned. One can hardly expect the coroner to give a verdict of accidental death."
"No, I understand that," she said. "What did you think of their evidence?"
Professor Wanstead directed a sharp glance from under his beetling eyebrows.
"Have you any ideas on the subject, Miss Marple?"
His voice was suggestive.
"Of course," said Professor Wanstead, "we knew beforehand what they were going to say."
"Yes."
"What you mean is that you are asking what I thought about them themselves, their feelings about it."
"It was interesting," said Miss Marple. "Very interesting. The red and black check pullover. Rather important, I think, don't you? Rather striking?"
"Yes, exactly that. He shot again that look at her under his eyebrows. What does it suggest to you exactly?
I think, said Miss Marple, I think the description of that might give us a valuable clue.
They came to the Golden Boar. It was only about 12:30, and Mrs. Sanborn suggested a little refreshment before going in to luncheon. As sherry and tomato juice and other liquors were being consumed, Mrs. Sanborn proceeded to make certain announcements.
I have taken advice, she said, both from the coroner and Inspector Douglas. Since the medical evidence has been taken fully, there will be at the church a funeral memorial service tomorrow at 11:00. I'm going to make arrangements with Mr. Courtney, the local vicar, about it. On the following day, it will be best, I think, to resume our tour. The programme will be slightly altered, since we have lost 3 days, but I think it can be reorganised on rather simpler lines. I have heard from one or two members of our party that they would prefer to return to London, presumably by rail. I can quite understand the feelings lying behind this, and would not like to try and influence you in any way. This death has been a very sad occurrence. I still cannot help but believe that Miss Temple's death was the result of an accident. Such a thing has happened before on that particular pathway, though there do not appear in this case to have been any geological or atmospherical conditions causing it. I think a good deal more investigation will have to be made. Of course, some hiker on a walking tour, that kind of thing, may have been pushing about boulders quite innocently, not realising that there was a danger for someone walking below in what he or she was doing. If so, if that person comes forward, the whole thing may be cleared up quite quickly. But I agree one cannot take that for granted at present. It seems unlikely that the late Miss Temple could have had an enemy or anyone who wished her harm of any kind. What I should suggest is that we do not discuss the accident any further. Investigations will be made by the local authorities, whose business it is. I think we will probably all like to attend the memorial service in the church tomorrow, and after that, on continuing the tour, I hope that it may distract our minds from the shock we have had. There are still some very interesting and famous houses to see, and some very beautiful scenery also. Luncheon being announced shortly after that, the subject was not discussed any further. That is to say, not openly. After lunch, as they took coffee in the lounge, people were prone to get together in little groups, discussing their further arrangements.
"Are you continuing on the tour?" asked Professor Wanstead of Miss Marple.
"No," said Miss Marple. She spoke thoughtfully. "No, I think that what has happened inclines me to remain here a little longer."
"At the Golden Boar or at the old manor house?"
"That rather depends as to whether I receive any further invitation to go back to the old manor house. I would not like to suggest it myself, because my original invitation was for the 2 nights that the tour was to have stayed here originally. I think possibly it would be better for me to remain at the Golden Boar."
"You don't feel like returning to St. Mary Mead?"
"Not yet," said Miss Marple. "There are one or two things I could do here, I think. One thing I have done already."
She met his inquiring gaze.
"If you are going on," she said, "with the rest of the party, I will tell you what I have put in hand and suggest a small side line of inquiry that might be helpful. The other reason that I wish to stay here I will tell you later. There are certain inquiries, local inquiries, that I want to make. They may not lead anywhere, so I think it as well not to mention them now. And you?"
"I should like to return to London. I have work there waiting to be done. Unless, that is, I can be helpful to you here."
"No," said Miss Marple. "I do not think so at present. I expect you have various inquiries of your own that you wish to put in hand."
"I came on the tour to meet you, Miss Marple."
"And now you have met me and know what I know, or practically all that I know, you have other inquiries to put in hand. I understand that. But before you leave here, I think there are one or two things, well, that might be helpful,
might give a result.
I see. You have ideas.
I am remembering what you said.
You have perhaps pinned down the smell of evil?
It is difficult, said Miss Marple, to know exactly what something wrong in the atmosphere really means.
But you do feel that there is something wrong in the atmosphere?
Oh, yes, very clearly.
And especially since Miss Temple's death, which of course was not an accident, no matter what Mrs. Sanborn hopes.
No, said Miss Marple, it was not an accident. What I don't think I have told you is that Miss Temple said to me once that she was on a pilgrimage.
Interesting, said the Professor. Yes, interesting. She didn't tell you what the pilgrimage was, to where or to whom.
No, said Miss Marple. If she'd lived just a little longer and not been so weak, she might have told me. But unfortunately, death came a little too soon.
So that you have not any further ideas on that subject?
No, only a feeling of assurance that her pilgrimage was put to an end by malign design. Someone wanted to stop her going wherever she was going, or stop her going to whomever she was going to. One can only hope that chance or providence may throw light on that.
That's why you're staying here?
Not only that, said Miss Marple. I want to find out something more about a girl called Nora Broad.
Nora Broad?
He looked faintly puzzled. The other girl who disappeared about the same time as Verity Hunt did. You remember you mentioned her to me. A girl who had boyfriends and was, I understand, very ready to have boyfriends. A foolish girl, but attractive apparently to the male sex. I think, said Miss Marple, that to learn a little more about her might help me in my inquiries.
Have it your own way, Detective Inspector Marple, said Professor Wanstead.
The service took place on the following morning. All the members of the tour were there. Miss Marple looked round the church. Several of the locals were there also. Mrs. Glynn was there, and her sister Clotilde. The youngest one, Anthea, did not attend. There were one or two people from the village also, she thought, probably not acquainted with Miss Temple, but there, out of a rather morbid curiosity in regard to what was now spoken of by the term foul play. There was, too, an elderly clergyman, in gaiters. Well over 70, Miss Marple thought, a broad-shouldered old man with a noble mane of white hair. He was slightly crippled and found it difficult both to kneel and to stand. It was a fine face, Miss Marple thought, and she wondered who he was. Some old friend of Elizabeth Temple, she presumed, who might perhaps have come from quite a long distance to attend the service. As they came out of the church, Miss Marple exchanged a few words with her fellow travellers. She knew now pretty well who was doing what. The butlers were returning to London.
"I told Henry I just couldn't go on with it," said Mrs. Butler. "You know, I feel all the time that any minute, just as we might be walking round a corner, someone you know might shoot us or throw a stone at us. Someone who's got a down on the famous houses of England."
"Now then, Mamie, now then," said Mr. Butler. "Don't you let your imagination go as far as that."
"Well, you just don't know nowadays. What with hijackers about and kidnapping and all the rest of it, I don't feel really protected anywhere."
Old Miss Lumley and Miss Bentham were continuing with the tour, their anxieties allayed.
"We've paid very highly for this tour, and it seems a pity to miss anything just because this very sad accident has happened. We rang up a very good neighbour of ours last night, and they are going to see to the cats, so we don't need to worry."
It was going to remain an accident for Miss Lumley and Miss Bentham. They had decided it was more comfortable that way. Mrs. Risley Porter was also continuing on the tour. Colonel and Mrs. Walker were resolved that nothing would make them miss seeing a particularly rare collection of fuchsias in the garden due to be visited the day after tomorrow. The architect, Jameson, was also guided by his wish to see various buildings of special interest for him. Mr. Caspar, however, was departing by rail, he said. Miss Cook and Miss Barrow seemed undecided.
"Pretty good walks round here," said Miss Cook. "I think we'll stay at the Golden Boar for a little. That's what you're going to do, isn't it, Miss Marple?"
"I really think so," said Miss Marple. "I don't feel quite equal to going on travelling and all that. I think a day or two's rest would be helpful to me after what's happened."
As the little crowd dispersed, Miss Marple took an unostentatious route of her own. From her handbag, she took out a leaf torn from her notebook, on which she had entered two addresses. The first, a Mrs. Blackett, lived in a neat little house and garden just by the end of the road where it sloped down towards the valley. A small, neat woman opened the door.
"Mrs. Blackett?"
"Yes, yes, ma'am, that's my name. I wonder if I might just come in and speak to you for a minute or two. I have just been to the service and I am feeling a little giddy. If I could just sit down for a minute or two?"
"Dear me, no, dear me. Oh, I'm sorry for that. Come right in, ma'am, come right in. That's right. You sit down here. Now I'll get you a glass of water, or maybe you'd like a pot of tea."
"No, thank you," said Miss Marple. "A glass of water would put me right."
Mrs. Blackett returned with a glass of water and a pleasurable prospect of talking about ailments and giddiness and other things.
"You know, I've got a nephew like that. He oughtn't to be at his age. He's not much over 50. But now and then he'll come over giddy all of a sudden, and unless he sits down at once, why, you don't know, sometimes he'll pass out right on the floor. Terrible it is, terrible. And doctors, they don't seem able to do anything about it. Here's your glass of water."
"Ah," said Miss Marple, sipping. "I feel much better."
"Been to the service, have you? For the poor lady has got done in, as some say, or accident, as others."
"I'd say it's accident every time. But these inquests and coroners, they always want to make things look criminal, they do."
"Oh, yes," said Miss Marple. "I've been so sorry to hear a lot of things like that in the past. I was hearing a great deal about a girl called Nora. Nora Broad, I think."
"Ah, Nora. Yes. Well, she was my cousin's daughter. Yes, a long while ago, that was. Went off and never came back. These girls, there's no holding them. I said often, I did, to Nancy Broad, that's my cousin, I said to her, 'You're out working all day.' And I said, 'What's Nora doing? You know, she's the kind that likes the boys.' 'Well,' I said, 'there'll be trouble. You see if there isn't.' And sure enough, I was quite right."
"You mean, the usual trouble? Yes, in the family way. Mind you, I don't think as my cousin Nancy knew about it yet. But of course, I'm 65 and I know what's what, and I know the way a girl looks, and I think I know who it was, but I'm not sure. I might have been wrong, because he went on living in the place and he was real cut up when Nora was missing."
"She went off, did she?"
"Well, she accepted a lift from someone, a stranger. That's the last time she was seen. I forget the make of the car now. Some funny name it had, an Audit or something like that. Anyway, she'd been seen once or twice in that car, and off she went in it. And it was said it was the same car that the poor girl what got herself murdered used to go riding in. But I don't think as that happened to Nora. If Nora had been murdered, the body would have come to light by now. Don't you think so?"
"It certainly seems likely," said Miss Marple. "Was she a girl who did well at school and all that?"
"Ah, no, she wasn't. She was idle and she wasn't too clever at her books either. No, she was all for the boys from the time she was 12 years old onwards. I think in the end she must have gone off with someone or other for good. But she never let anyone know. She never sent as much as a postcard. Went off, I think, with someone who's promised her things, you know. Another girl I knew, but that was when I was young, went off with one of them Africans. He told her his father was a sheikh. Funny sort of word, but a sheikh, I think it was. Anyway, it was somewhere in Africa or in Algiers.
Yes, in Algiers it was, somewhere there, and she was going to have all sorts of wonderful things. He had 6 camels, the boy's father, she said, and a whole troop of horses. And she was going to live in a wonderful house, she was, with carpets hanging up all over the walls, which seems a funny place to put carpets. And off she went. She came back again 3 years later. Yes, terrible time she'd had. Terrible. They lived in a nasty little house made of earth. Yes, it was. And nothing much to eat except what they call couscous, which I always thought was lettuce, but seems it isn't. Something more like semolina pudding. Oh, terrible it was. And in the end, he said she was no good to him and he'd divorce her. He said he'd only got to say, "I divorce you," 3 times. And he did, and walked out. And somehow or other, some kind of society out there took charge of her and paid her fare home to England. And there she was. Ah, but that was about 30 to 40 years ago, that was. Now, Nora, that was only about 7 or 8 years ago. But I expect she'll be back one of these days, having learned her lesson and finding out that all these fine promises didn't come to much. Had she anyone to go to here except her mother, your cousin, I mean? Anyone who... Well, there's many as was kind to her. There was the people at the old manor house, you know. Mrs. Glynn wasn't there then, but Miss Clotilde, she was always one to be good to the girls from school. Yes, many a nice present she's given Nora. She gave her a very nice scarf and a pretty dress once. Very nice it was. A summer frock, a sort of foulard silk. Oh, she was very kind, Miss Clotilde was. Tried to make Nora take more interest in her schooling. Lots of things like that. Advised her against the way she was going on, because, you see... Well, I wouldn't like to say it, not when she's my cousin's child, though. Mark you, my cousin is only one who married my boy cousin, that is to say. But, I mean, it was something terrible the way she went on with all the boys. Anyone could pick her up. Real sad it is. I'd say she'll go on the streets in the end. I don't believe she has any future but that. I don't like to see these things, but there it is. Anyway, perhaps it's better than getting herself murdered like Miss Hunt did, what lived at the old manor house. Cruel that was. They thought she'd gone off with someone, and the police, they was busy, always asking questions and having the young men who'd been with the girl up to help them with their inquiries and all that. Geoffrey Grant there was, Billy Thompson, and the Lanfords Harry, all unemployed, with plenty of jobs going if they wanted to take them. Things usedn't to be like that when I was young. Girls behaved proper, and the boys knew they got to work if they wanted to get anywhere. Miss Marple talked a little more, said that she was now quite restored, thanked Mrs. Blackett, and went out. Her next visit was to a girl who was planting out lettuces. Not abroad. Oh, she hasn't been in the village for years. Went off with someone she did. She was a great one for boys. I always wondered where she'd end up. Did you want to see her for any particular reason?
I had a letter from a friend abroad, said Miss Marple, untruthfully. A very nice family, and they were thinking of engaging a Miss Nora abroad. She'd been in some trouble, I think. Married someone who was rather a bad lot, and had left her and gone off with another woman, and she wanted to get a job looking after children. My friend knew nothing about her, but I gathered she came from this village. So I wondered if there was anyone here who could, well, tell me something about her. You went to school with her, I understand.
Oh, yes. We were in the same class, we were. Mind you, I didn't approve of all Nora's goings-on. She was boy-mad, she was. Well, I had a nice boyfriend myself that I was going steady with at the time, and I told her she'd do herself no good going off with every Tom, Dick and Harry that offered her a lift in a car or took her along to a pub where she told lies about her age, as likely as not. She was a good, mature girl as looked a lot older than she was.
Dark or fair?
Oh, she had dark hair. Pretty hair it was. Always loose-like, you know, as girls do.
Were the police worried about her when she disappeared?
Yes. You see, she didn't leave no word behind. She just went out one night and didn't come back. She was seen getting into a car, and nobody saw the car again, and nobody saw her. Just at that time, there'd been a good many murders, you know. Not specially round here, but all over the country. The police, they were rounding up a lot of young men and boys. Thought as Nora might be a body at the time we did, but not she. She was all right. I'd say as likely as not she's making a bit of money still in London or one of these big towns, doing a striptease, something of that kind. That's the kind she was.
I don't think, said Miss Marple, that if it's the same person, that she'd be very suitable for my friend.
She'd have to change a bit if she was to be suitable, said the girl.